Bobby, good morning, everyone. A couple of years ago, when this program was in its nascent stage, I was asked to give a talk, to give Kol Yom Rishon. This was before Midrash Yom Rishon was even in existence. And it was a Sunday in late April, the beginning of May, the day before Pesach Sheni. So I said, okay, I'll speak about Pesach Sheni. And I didn't realize that YUTorah.org is the most visited website in the world. But if anyone is interested, they can hear part one of this year on YUTorah.org. But of course, today we will be giving a shiur which further develops the idea that I spoke about a couple of years ago. And if, for those of you who were not here then, or don't recall, we will review some of the basic information of Pesach Sheni that we discussed then. I want to discuss today, since it is Yud Aleph Iyar, the unique phenomenon that is Pesach Sheni. Many of us observe Pesach Sheni in the old-fashioned way by skipping Tachnun. Other than that, some people have accustomed to eat matzah, but there really isn't any way in which we really note this minor holiday. But I think if we take a look at the psukim in Bamidbar, in Parshas Baloska, where Pesach Sheni is discussed, and raise some issues within those psukim, and also analyze some of the halachic sources on the overall phenomenon that is Pesach Sheni, will begin to understand its significance and even its centrality and why it is important to all of us and why we should mark it either via a shir on Kol Yom Rishon or by thinking about some of the lessons and the messages of Pesach Sheni. What I really want to do today is to try to demonstrate how Pesach Sheni harkens back to the very first Pesach in Mitzrayim and discuss and analyze the relationship that is drawn in both the Mishnayos and the Rambam between those two celebrations. The truth is there are three different Pesachs in the Mishnayos. There's Pesach Mitzrayim, the Pesach that was celebrated in Egypt, and then there's Pesach Rishon and Pesach Sheni, or Pesach Doros and Pesach Rishon. They're really synonymous. The first Pesach that's generally celebrated throughout the generations following the first Pesach in Egypt, and Pesach Sheni. So we're going to try to understand Pesach Sheni today, but of course, in order to fully understand Pesach Sheni, we have to compare and contrast it, as the Mishnah does, with the other Pesachs that we're perhaps more familiar with. Let's take a look first at the Psukim which deal with Pesach Sheni, and Rashi on those Psukim, and hopefully then we'll begin to at least raise some important issues with regards to the celebration of Pesach Sheni. If anyone has a question at any point, just let me know and we'll pause. Take a look at source number one. Source number one, again, is taken from Parshas Baloska, and it reads as follows. Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe v'Var Sinai b'shana ha'shenis l'tzeisam me'eretz Mitzrayim b'chodesh harishon le'mor. The following commandment took place in the second month, the second year, the first month, since following the exodus from Egypt. So what's significant about the dating is the fact that this is out of order. The beginning of Sefer Bamidbar begins with a discussion of Bachodesh HaSheni, with a discussion that took place and the various commandments regarding the encampment and the census and everything else, which took place on the first of Iyar. Somewhat peculiarly, the Torah backtracks a bit and describes the events of the month preceding that, the month of Nisan. And Rashi, of course, points out that this is not a unique phenomenon, especially not for Rashi. The Ramban might take issue with Rashi on this. Rashi never is hesitant to say, Ein mukta melucha b'Torah. The Ramban and some of the other Rishonim are a little bit more reluctant to explain narratives that way. But Rashi points out in source number two, Parsha Sheberosh HaSefer Lo Ne'emra Ad Iyar, Lamadta She'ein Seder Mukta Mu'uchar Batar. Okay, this is Again, teaching us, reinforcing this lesson that the Torah is not a history book. We don't have to follow it in chronological order. But then Rashi adds a puzzling comment. Why? Rashi still wants to know. Why is it out of order? Okay, it doesn't have to be in order, but is there some reason, is there some method to the fact that the Torah delays this particular narrative to the middle of Sefer Bamidbar rather than beginning in chronological order? Rashi doesn't have to maintain the chronological order, but he still wants to understand why it's not. V'lama lo pasach bazu, nipneshu gnusan shel Yisrael. The reason why Sefer Bamidbar didn't open with this discussion is because it's Genusan Shel Yisrael. We're familiar with that from the Haggadah, Maskil B'Genus. It's a source of shame for or embarrassment or it's a negative comment about Bnei Yisrael. Shekol Arba'im Shana Shel Yisrael B'Midbar Lo Hikrivu Ela Pesach Zebelvai. Because this moment, the second year, the first month, was the only time in the entire 40-year experience, sojourn in the desert, that the Jewish people offered the Korban Pesach. So why is that so embarrassing? Why is that such a gnus?
We're supposed to do it every year.
Okay, so it would seem, as Charlie points out, Charlie's my ringer, it would seem that the Jewish people were supposed to offer the Korban Pesach every year. Okay. Is it that? Or were they supposed to offer, did they offer all the other Korbanos throughout the 40 years in the desert? So there's a lot of literature on this. The Netziv discusses this comment of Rashi at length in the Emek Dover and says he doesn't really understand what he's talking about. Is it just the fact that the Jewish people sinned with the Chedah Meraglim and were forced to stay in the desert for 40 years? Because according to the Netziv, they didn't really offer any sacrifices in the desert on a regular basis following the consecration of the Mishkan. They didn't offer Korban Pesach, but they didn't offer other Korbanos. So, maybe because of Bris Milah or whatever it is, but still, that's somewhat of an indirect gnus here. They didn't offer Korban Pesach other than this one time. So that's why we bury this narrative, because if we put it front and center, we'll realize this was the only time Bnei Yisrael offered Korban Pesach. But they didn't offer any Korbanos. What's the shame? What's the gnus? Why is it so terrible that they didn't offer Korban Pesach? Yes? Excellent. So we're gonna come back to, there seems to be a special attachment, even though they may not have been able to offer other Korbanos, there seems to be a unique emphasis on Korban Pesach. Korban Pesach, maybe because it doesn't necessarily need the Beis HaMikdash or the Mishkan in order to be offered. It was offered for the first time without a Beis HaMikdash. That's why nowadays there's discussions about this. It may not need Reach Nichoach, the Korban Pesach. So we're going to come back at the end to try to explain some of those details about Korban Pesach. I think this fellow who talked about how we should all eat kitnios in Israel also talked about how we should offer Korban Pesach. So I don't think either one had much traction amongst the rabbinic establishment, but we will talk about, not that particular suggestion, but why it is that this was a gnus for Bnei Yisrael. Continuing with the Psukim, the Torah tells us the story. Vayasu Bnei Yisrael es ha-Pesach b'moado, b'arba asar yom b'chodesh hazeh bin arbaim ta'asu oso b'moado, k'chol chukosav v'chol mishpotav ta'asu oso. They did what they were supposed to do. Vaydaber Moshe bnei Yisrael asos haPesach, vayasu es haPesach Pesach barishon barvaser yom lachodesh bin arba'im in Bar Sinai kechol atsher tziva Hashem es Moshe kein asu bnei Yisrael. Just notice that until this point and continuing to the next pasuk, the sacrifice is referred to as Pesach. We'll note a shift in a moment. Vayhi anashim asher hayu tmeim lenefesh adam, v'lo yachlu lasos haPesach bayom ahu. There were those, we all are familiar with the story, we're not sure exactly whether they were the ones who were involving themselves with Atzmos Yosef or some other incident that occurred. They were Tamei Meis. They became impure and couldn't bring the Karban Pesach at its appropriate time. So they come to Moshe and Aaron and ask the following. Vayomru ha'anashim ha'hema elav, anachnu tmeim l'nefesh adam, lama nigara levilti ha'krivis korban Hashem b'moado b'sof b'nei Yisrael. These tmeim say, why should we suffer? Why shouldn't we have the opportunity to offer the Karban Pesach? We were proscribed from offering it at its proper time because through no fault of our own, especially if they were involved in doing something significant and as per the directive of Moshe Rabbeinu, it's hard to fault these people for doing what they were supposed to do. So the Torah then says, Vayomer aleihem Moshe imdu v'ashma ma'itzaveh Hashem lachem. It seems as if Moshe has been stumped. He empathizes with the request, with their feelings, and he says, I got to check with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe lemor, daber el b'nei Yisrael lemor, ish ish ki yetamei lenefesh obederech v'kolka lachem, olodoroseichem v'asa pesach lahashem, v'chodesh hasheni barba asar yom bin arbaim yasu oso almatos umrom yochlu, lo yashiru mimenu ad boker ve'etzem lo yishbu bo, kechol chukas ha-pesach yasu oso. Va'isha asher hu tahor v'derech lo haya v'chadal lasos ha-pesach, v'nechrosa nefesh ha'i me'ameh, ki korban Hashem lo hikriv b'moado chato yisa isha hu. So the Torah then gives us the commandment of Pesach Sheni. Up until this point, we didn't know, the Torah hadn't revealed the commandment of Pesach Sheni. It would appear that Moshe also had not been told about Pesach Sheni. He responds to the request of the Tmeim and says, yes, you have another opportunity. You have Pesach Sheni, Yudalit Iyar, 30 days after Pesach. Remember, the Korban Pesach is offered the day before what we call Pesach. It's offered on Yudalit Nisan. So 30 days later, on Yudalit Iyar, you have that opportunity to offer the Korban. What's strange, and what Rashi points out, is that it would appear, on one level, or at least one perspective, that had these people never come along and said, Lama Nigara, there may never have been a Pesach Sheni. Rashi relates to this in source number 2, Pasuk Zayin, in the second half of the Rashi, the last two lines, V'ru'uya ha'yisah parsha zu le'amer al yidei Moshe, kishar kol ha'Torah kula, ela shezachu elu shetomar al yideihen, Rashi's explanation, there are other Rishonim who disagree and say no, that really they were the impetus for the entire commandment of Pesach Sheni. Rashi says, not that radical. There was always going to be a Pesach Sheni, but the commandment of Pesach Sheni was withheld until the people came along and spurred Moshe and, as an extension, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to ultimately reveal it. This is pretty unique. There may be one other instance in the Torah where we have something similar to that. Right. And what's the words that they use there? Lamanigara. Similar formulation. So clearly these episodes are not just from a literary perspective linked, but even conceptually linked. But what we have here is if not a singular phenomenon, then one that's very rare, where the Jewish people are the ones who, as it were, cause the commandment to be given, or at least receive the schus as if they were the ones who caused the commandment to be given. Why is it so important that Pesach Sheni be revealed, the commandment of Pesach Sheni be revealed in response to a request to the initiative of the Tmeim? Why is it that the Torah chooses to reveal the Pesach Sheni commandment in this particular way? Additionally, as I noted before, there's a shift. And hopefully some of these questions will start answering each other. There's a shift in the way the Pesach is described. Early on in the parsha, when the Torah is just giving us the details of the fact that they offered the Korban Pesach at its right time, the Korban Pesach is called Pesach. When the Tmeim come to Moshe and say, Lama nigara levulti hakrivas korban Hashem B'moado, b'soch b'nei Yisrael, the Torah then shifts and almost exclusively refers to the Pesach as Pesach Hashem or as Korban Hashem. That appellation, Korban Hashem, the Korban of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, or Pesach Hashem, or Pesach LaHashem, comes up again and again in the context of Korban Pesach. In the Psukim in Bo, in the Psukim in Emor, whenever this Korban is discussed, LaHashem, Pesach LaHashem, Korban LaHashem, that's the way it's referred to. In fact, it happens so often that the Gemara in Zvachim explains that the reason for the unparalleled strict requirements for lishma when you offer a Korban Pesach is rooted in this expression, Pesach LaHashem. The Mishnah in Zvachim tells us that there are only two karbanos, which when you offer, there's several differences of opinion, but according to the Tanakhama, there are only two karbanos where if you have the wrong intention, not only does it make the karban not fulfill your chova, but it actually passels, it disqualifies the karban entirely. Those two karbanos are chatas and pesach. Right? The ola, if you have in mind a shlomim, when you're offering an ola, according to the Tanakhama and other opinions, you have to bring another ola, but you don't have to stop what you're doing. You can still offer the karban that you had the improper kavana for. You can still offer that karban. When it comes to chatas and pesach, that's not the case. If you think while you're offering a karban pesach that it's a shlomim or that it's something else, that's a death blow to the pesach. You can't offer it anymore. It's either perfect or it's not, and it's out. In fact, the Korban Pesach is even stricter in a certain sense than the Chatos. I always like to talk about Kachim. I'm sorry if this is not what you had in mind. In fact, the Pesach is even stricter than Chatos in one sense, that if you're Shochet L'Shem Chulin when it comes to Chatos, if you just think that this, if the Kohen has intention that this is just a Shechita to eat the meat, it doesn't passel the chatas, whereas it does passel the Korban Pesach. That gets into the whole discussion, mina machriv versus mina ena machriv. So the bottom line is that this Pesach LaHashem is very significant. It has halachic impact, and we notice that there is a shift within this section, within these psukim. The first half seems to just refer to it as Pesach. And then, once the Tmeim make their request, we notice a shift. Okay, we'll explain that as well when we come to the conclusion. So again, the change in terminology in the context of Pesach Sheni, and why this term of LaHashem places such an emphasis on proper intent when it comes to the Korban Pesach is another question that we have to deal with. But from a broader perspective, we have to understand the entire institution of Pesach Sheni, and really explore the relationship that Pesach Sheni has with Pesach Rishon. If you can't find a shofar on Rosh Hashanah, or Dalan Minim on Sukkot, or even Matzah on Seder night, you're not required or even able to perform the mitzvah at a later date. We have one or two examples of Tashlumin when it comes to Tefillah and when it comes to Chagiga, but it's really rare that we find an alternative date, and certainly we don't have an alternative opportunity to fulfill a mitzvah, and certainly we don't have this kind of thing where 30 days later, a fixed date to fulfill a mitzvah that through no fault of your own, you weren't able to fulfill. In addition, if we take a look at the Rambam in source number 3, you'll note that this particular mitzvah of Pesach Sheni is not subsumed under the broader category of Pesach. It has a nature of its own. According to the Rambam, who paskins like one of the deists in the Gemara, Pesach Sheni is a regel bifnei atzmo, kind of like how we refer to Shmini Atzeres as a regel bifnei atzmo. It has its own standing and stature. It has its own enumerated mitzvah. The Rambam in source number 3, v'hamitzvah hanun zayin, he shetzivanu lishchot Pesach Sheni, misha nimna mimenu Pesach Rishon. That's the mitzvah. Skipping to the second line. If somebody wants to give me difficulties, and in fact, the Rambam always had people who who wanted to ask questions on him. When it comes to Sefer HaMitzvos issues, we're familiar with the Hasagos of the Ramban, but a fascinating Sefer is the Sefer Ma'aseh Nisim. Familiar with that? The Ma'aseh Nisim is a work that was written on the Sefer HaMitzvos by Rav Daniel HaBavli, who was a contemporary of Rabbeinu Avram ben Arambam. And this Sefer, which is found in the back of some editions of the Rambam, and now the Frankel Rambam and Sefer Mitzvos has incorporated many of the discussions on the side of the particular Mitzvos where it comes up, or even in the Shirashim where it comes up. And this book consists of questions that Rav Daniel HaBavli asked Rabbeinu Avram ben Harambam, the son of the Rambam, about the Minyan HaMitzvos of the Rambam. Anything you can imagine he asks, but it's usually these kinds of questions. Why is this counted? Why is this not counted? Why is an Arba Minim counted as four? You know, you count Tefillin as two. Why don't you count Arba Minim as four? So anytime there are these kinds of issues that come up, Rav Daniel HaBavli is there to ask the question. In fact, here, Rav Daniel HaBavli says, in Simen Zion, I believe, the Rambam here is inconsistent. He should be counting Pesach Sheni within, subsuming it within the regular commandment of Pesach. The Rambam himself gives the answer. A detail of a mitzvah, a particular halacha associated with a mitzvah, doesn't normally engender a separate mitzvah. So why here is the Rambam not being consistent? Yada maksha kushyazos shechacham kvar chilku bePesach Sheni im yed dino kedin Pesach Rishon o hutzivoy nemar baatzmo o paska halacha shehutzivoy nemar baatzmo. The rabbis discussed this in the Gemara. The Tanaim debated this, and the psak is that it is a separate tzivoy. Velachein ra'ui limnoso so bifnei atzmo. Ugmar psachim amru chayiv kareis al rishon v'chayiv kareis al hasheni. Divrei Rebbe. Rebbe is of the opinion that in certain circumstances you can be chayiv kareis for the first one, and then if there are other individuals who can be chayiv kareis for the second one. Divrei Rebbe. Rav Nosson amar chayiv kareis al rishon upato al sheni. Rav Chananya ben Akavya omar af al rishon eno chayiv kareis elin kein lo asa shnehem. V'shal ha Talmud v'amar b'mai kamiflugi. What is this three-way debate? Rebbe Savar Sheni Regel Bifnei Atzmohu. Reb Nassan Savar Sheni Tashlumin Lurishonhu. And the Rambam doesn't say it, but Reb Chananya holds that the Sheni is not Tashlumin, but it's a Takanta, and therefore you have to not do both in order to be Chayiv Karis. Hinei Kfar Hizbar, Masha Ramaznu Eilav. Visham Amru Hilkach, Hizid Bazeh, Ubazeh, Klomer Shalo Hikriv Pesach Rishon, Lo Pesach Sheni, Bizadon Divrei Kol Chayiv. Etc. There's a whole debate exactly what the particulars are. The bottom line, though, for the Rambam is that we paskin sheni regel b'fnei atzmahu. And therefore, for example, someone who converts in between the first Pesach and the second Pesach is obligated to bring Pesach sheni. If Pesach rishon was merely a makeup or a corrective for Tashlumin or a Takanta for the first, then someone who missed the first and wasn't obligated in the first wouldn't be obligated to give it in the case of the second. Now the Rambam Shita itself is somewhat complicated. There are some stiros between what he writes in the Sefer HaMitzvos and he writes in Hilchos Korban Pesach. My Rebbe, Rav Rosenzweig, in an Ora Mizrach article a few years ago, and at a Reitz dinner a couple years ago when he was honored, discussed the Shitas HaRambam about Korban Pesach at length. It's probably on yutorah.org, or you can get it through Ora Mizrach. The Rambam seems to have a hierarchy. Only those who were hizid, let me put it differently, those who were b'derech rechoka or tameh for the first one can never be chayiv kareis, even if they're hizid b'shein. Because in a certain sense, those tmeim, that specifically tmeim or b'derech rechoka, and not any other ones, are people who were mufka, who weren't bar chiyuvas at all. Only those who are considered bar chiyuva for the first, and who miss it, even if they miss it b'ones, and then the second one they miss b'mezid, only they are chayiv karis. So I refer you all to that particular article if you want some more on the specific shita of the Rambam itself with regard to Pesach Sheni. But what emerges from the Rambam and the discussion of the Gemara is that the consensus opinion is, in fact, that Pesach Sheni is a regel b'fnei atzma. That there are people, a katan or a ger, a convert or a minor, who come of age or become part of the Jewish people in between, are obligated to bring the Pesach Sheni. Therefore, this has to be counted separately. And therefore, it would seem that there is some sort of independence. There is some sort of unique emphasis that Pesach Sheni has above and beyond Pesach Rishon, which warrants this particular mitzvah to be enumerated separately. So, in addition to trying to figure out why this is a separate mitzvah, we have to try to understand why it is that Pesach Sheni has this unique phenomenon, why Pesach has this fixed alternative date. Even as we recognize that there are many of the same laws with regards to the Karban itself for Pesach Sheni as there are when it comes to Pesach Rishon. Tzli, eating it with matzah and maror, etzem lo sishbru, nosar, all these shared halachos, and the story of the request for Pesach Sheni itself underscore that the theme of Pesach Sheni is in fact related and linked to Pesach Rishon. So what are we to make of this whole institution of Pesach Sheni? On the one hand, it's so indispensable, it needs to be done even when you miss the opportunity the first time. We have this singular tashlumen, but that tashlumen seems to draw upon while simultaneously achieving some independence from the initial obligation. So that's what we have to try to figure out in the next half hour. Are there any questions? Yeah. I don't think so. I don't think so. I think it would still... It's only an obligation for anyone who didn't do the first one. But you're right. It's not... That just highlights the point. It's not completely independent. On some level, it's a regel b'fnei atzmo. And on some level, it's connected. I mean, the same kind of question can be asked about Shemini Atzeres. You know, on some level, it's certainly disconnected from Sukkot. On another level, you know, it's Achron Shel Chag, and it's referred in several places as being very much connected to Sukkot. So you have to try to come up with something in terms of Shemini Atzeres, trying to understand why Pazar Kashav, for those halachos, it's independent, whereas for others, it would seem to draw upon some of the Kedusha of, you know, Yom Zman Simchaseinu and other things which it does share in common with Sukkot. Any other questions? Okay. So if we're going to look to try to figure out the mystery of Pesach Sheni, we, like we said, we can look at the first, at Pesach Rishon or Pesach Daros. My thesis today is that we should also look at Pesach Mitzrayim, and that Pesach Mitzrayim, the original Pesach, Karban Pesach in Egypt, offers us a great model for trying to understand the nature of Pesach Sheni and how it is somewhat independent from the regular Pesach. So first, though, let's look at the comparison to Pesach Doros or Pesach Rishon. The Chinuch, in his Sefer HaChinuch, both in the mitzvah of Karban Pesach and the mitzvah of Pesach Sheni, emphasizes one theme, the same theme. He doesn't seem to be bothered in terms of explaining the Shar Shei HaMitzvah. He doesn't seem to be bothered by the fact that he seems to say the same thing for both. He thinks, technically maybe, just on a minyan and mitzvahs level, since it's called Regel B'fnei Atzmo, it's counted as a separate mitzvah, but it doesn't necessarily have to have a distinct motif or theme from the first one. Our argument is going to be that, in fact, it does, and that's what justifies the fact that we call it a regel b'fnei atzmo, that it has a theme which is somewhat distinct from Pesach Rishon. So the Chinuch in both Mitzvah Shin Pei in source number 5, which I'm not going to read inside, and in source number 6, Mitzvah Hei, emphasizes what we emphasize at the Haggadah, what Rabbi Gamliel focuses on the Shlosha Dvarim in the Haggadah, in the Seder, from the Mishnah and Pesachim, the fact that the purpose of Karban Pesach, Pesach al-Shulma, Al shum shepasach batei avosenu b'mitzrayim. What are we remembering? What are we focusing on at the Seder when we talk about Korban Pesach? According to Rabbi Gamliel, and according to the Sefer Chinuch, the purpose or the reason or the shoresh of these two mitzvot is to recall that night in Egypt, to recall the miracles overall of Yetzias Mitzrayim, and in particular to recall the moments preceding the exodus from Egypt when Hashem passed over the Jewish homes. This Korban is a way of giving thanks, paying homage to, remembering, appreciating, all those types of feelings and emotions come into the Korban Pesach, source number 6, Kidei sheyizkru ha-Yehudim le'olam ha-nisim ha-gedolim sha'asal lahem Hashem yisbarach b'yitzias Mitzrayim. Korban Pesach is about remembering what HaKadosh Baruch Hu did for us when we were leaving Egypt. That would seem to be what we do at the Haggadah. That would seem to be the focus of Rabbi Gamliel, and certainly that seems to be what the Sefer HaChinuch emphasizes. However, while this explanation and this emphasis of Hashkacha Pratis and the Nisim V'Niflos that HaKadosh Baruch Hu did for us is certainly a critical part of the story, and again, the emphasis at the Haggadah, it doesn't really account for the phenomenon of Pesach Sheni. There are many other mitzvos, the Ramban in Parshas Bo notes this, that commemorate the Hashgacha of Hashem and the miracles that HaKadosh Baruch Hu did for us in Egypt. That Ramban at the end of Bo talks about tefillin and mezuzah and everything else, which reminds us of that. And yet, this element of Pesach Sheni, this independent mitzvah of Pesach Sheni, would seem to still be unique among this constellation of mitzvahs. So I want to try to develop another idea. I did this a couple of years ago, but I want to do it this time with the help of the comparison between Pesach Mitzrayim and Pesach Doros. If you take a look at sources number 7 and 8, see that the Mishnah does a very interesting thing in the 9th chapter of Psachim. The Mishnah sets up comparisons between Pesach Rishon and Pesach Sheni, and Pesach Mitzrayim and Pesach Doros. Source number 7, Ma Bein Pesach HaRishon LeSheni, HaRishon Aser B'Bayir Al B'Yimatzei, V'HaSheni Chameitz U'Matzei Imo B'Bayis. Right, Pesach Sheni, this is important for us to know, we're studying Pesach Sheni. Pesach Sheni, you can have chametz in your home. It doesn't make a difference. When you offer the korban, you only eat it with matzah, but you don't need to clean out your house. So the whole motif of chametz and getting rid of chametz and ridding our homes of chametz and the idea of lechem oni or ki garshu mi mitzrayim lo yachlu liyismameya doesn't seem to be a factor when it comes to Pesach Sheni. So again, we're already sensing that the story of the Exodus itself is not necessarily as critical to the celebration of Pesach Sheni as it is to Pesach Rishon. They're intimately connected. The night of the Seder, the Pesach, the Korban Pesach from Yudalid, ends up being this kind of controlling factor at the Seder. We eat everything with the Korban Pesach. We can't fulfill the mitzvos after. That's why we eat afikomen before chatzos. The Korban Pesach had to be eaten by chatzos, and according to some, Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim and matzah and everything else needs to be done by chatzos. So Pesach Sheni would seem to be not associated with the prohibitions of chametz. Furthermore, Harishon ton halal ba'achilaso, v'asheni eno ton halal ba'achilaso. The element of halal that we sing at the Seder, that's not a requirement for Pesach Sheni. Again, this makes a lot of sense. If Pesach Rishon is not about giving halal and hodah for the exodus from Egypt, which it doesn't seem to be about, it's not on the night of the exodus, so then we can understand why this isn't a feature of Pesach Sheni. Zevzeh ton halal ba'asiyasan v'ne'echalin sli al matzo m'rorim v'dochanes ha'shabbos. And then the Mishnah gives us those things which it has in common, which the two of them have in common, that you do sing halal when you're offering them, and some of the halachos of eating and similar types of halachos are similar with both. Now this list is not exhaustive. This is just a parenthetical aside. These lists are not exhaustive. We're going to see in a moment that especially the Pesach Mitzrayim, Pesach Doros list, the Tosefta in Pesachim has 10 other differences between them. I think when the Mishnayos do this Ma Bein Pesach Rishon and Pesach Sheni, or Ma Bein Pesach Mitzrayim and Pesach Doros, it's doing something very interesting. It's not saying here's an exhaustive list of all the differences. It's giving you the critical differences between them, the differences between them that demonstrate what's really underlying the differences between the two. You know, in Mishnayos, in the end of the first parak of Megillah, Ein Bein, all the Ein Beins. You're familiar with those Mishnayos? Ein Bein, Shabbos LeYomtov, Ela Ochel Nefesh Bilvah. Problem is, one's Skila and one's Karis. And there are plenty of other potential differences between them. The explanation that always occurred to me is that what these Mishnayos are trying to do, the Ein Beins and the Ma Beins, is it's trying to zero in on the critical differences, the differences which give us the conceptual basis to differentiate, which then explain all the other differences. Meaning the fact that there's no Ochel Nefesh prohibition when it comes to Yom Tov is the critical difference, and that explains some of the other, that's what really characterizes the difference between Meleches Avoda and the Isser Melacha and Shabbos, the fact that there is a Heter Ochel Nefesh, and that then explains some of the other differences as well. So I think what's going on here in these Mishnahs is also a similar kind of phenomenon. The Mishnah is zeroing in on what are the key differences between Pesach Rishon and Pesach Sheni. And the common denominator seems to be, the key difference seems to be, its relationship with Chametz and the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim. It doesn't need Hallel when you're eating it. It doesn't need the prohibition of Chametz in your house, etc. The Mishnah does then a similar type of distinction between Pesach Mitzrayim and Pesach Doros. Here, as I said, the Tosefta has a whole slew of additional differences. Ma bein Pesach Mitzrayim and Pesach Doros. Pesach Mitzrayim, the Mishnah tells us, Mekcho mi be'asor, v'ton haza ba'agudas ezov v'al amashkof, v'al shtem zuzos. Pesach Mitzrayim needed to be taken 4 days before. Needed to be set aside and designated, purchased 4 days beforehand on Shabbos HaGadol. And it needed to be sprinkled on the doorposts, dipped in the hyssop and spread on the doorposts and on the lintel. V'ne'echal b'chipazon, and it needed to be eaten in haste. B'layla echad, u'pesach doros no'e kol shiv. And this mission is a little bit complicated because it implies that one can eat the Karban Pesach for Pesach Doros all 7 days. We, of course, know that that's not the case. The same Isser of Noser applies after the first night. So the Mishnah, the Gemara reinterprets this Mishnah and says, no, the key distinction is that Chametz and Matzah really only applies to Pesach Mitzrayim for 1 day, whereas in Pesach Doros, Chametz and Matzah applies all 7 days. The truth is, though, there's one daya in the Tosefta that says there was no Isser Chametz whatsoever in Mitzrayim. It's not totally clear from the Pesukim when exactly the prohibitions of Chametz were given, and whether there was just no Chametz with the Karban Pesach, or whether there was an Isser of Chametz or Isser of Bal Yira Bal Yimatzeh in the house in Mitzrayim. It's not totally clear. Again, there's also a bit of a chronology issue, because if the Isser Chametz is because of the Kigarshim Mitzrayim below Yahuli Ismameya, and that's why we don't need Chametz, they haven't yet gotten out. So we'll talk about that in a moment. Rav Kasher in his Haggadah Shlema has a whole discussion about Pesach Mitzrayim and what exactly is 4 or 5 different deos in the Rishonim and the Amoraim about what were the different opinions on what they did that first Pesach. What did they actually observe It's a fascinating historical question, but it also gets to our particular question, which is this relationship between Pesach Mitzrayim and Pesach Doros. What is that relationship? What was Pesach Mitzrayim? How is that different than the way we celebrate Pesach? So I think a comment of Rashi, which we'll get to in a moment, highlights the difference. I wanted to just, before we get to that Rashi, there's an amazing Rambam at the end of Hilchos Karban Pesach, which I didn't notice until I was looking into Pesach Mitzrayim and Pesach Doros, where the Rambam kind of combines, it's very peculiar, his discussion of Pesach Rishon versus Pesach Sheni. He has a whole discussion of that, and that's important, halacha l'mais. So we need to know the difference between Pesach Rishon and Pesach Sheni. But in the very same halacha, it's the last halacha of Hilchos Karban Pesach, the Rambam also takes the time to explain that there's also a difference between Pesach Mitzrayim and Pesach Doros. I think the Rambam picks up on the parallelism of the Mishnah, the Ma Bains of Pesach Mitzrayim, Pesach Doros, and Pesach Rishon and Pesach Sheni, and puts them all together within one halacha, again, drawing our attention to the fact that there is perhaps some relationship between Pesach Mitzrayim and Pesach Sheni, that they share something in common that's perhaps different than Pesach Rishon / Pesach Doros. So I think in order to understand and answer all of our questions, a more comprehensive approach to all these issues emerges from an analysis of the Psukim themselves in Parshas Bo. The Psukim that precede the actual event of Yetzias Mitzrayim. If you look at Perek Beis, I'm not going to have time to read it all inside, but we're familiar with it from the laning on Shabbos HaGadol, Shabbos HaParshas HaChodesh, and on Pesach itself. We kind of pick up on Pesach where we left off on Parshas HaChodesh. The original tzivui of Karban Pesach is inserted right between the prophecy of Makas Bechoros and the actual occurrence of that Makkah. If you look at the first, at the Psukim, there's kind of a back and forth between the narrative telling the story of what Hashem tells Moshe is going to happen and what Moshe is supposed to tell the Jewish people and Paro, and the actual commandments, the halachos for Pesach Rishon, for Pesach Mitzrayim and Pesach Doros. Take a look at Pasuk Chaf Aleph, for example, in source number 10. Vayikra Moshe l'chol zignei Yisrael v'yomer alehem mishchu k'chu lachem tzon l'mishpachoseichem v'shachatu ha-pasach, and then it gives some of the halachos. Before that, the Torah had given the halachos for Pesach Doros in Pasuk Tesvav. Shivas yamim matzos tochelu ach bayomer rishon, etc. So there's kind of a back and forth here between the tzivoy la'asid and the events that are going on now, and the tzivoy right now. And what I think emerges, if you look at Pasuk Chavches, Vayelchu Vayasu B'nei Yisrael, Kasher Tziva Hashem Es Moshe V'Aaron Ken Asu, then turning over the page, Vayihi B'chatzi Alayla V'Hashem Yikako B'chor B'Eretz Mitzrayim, what happens is that the Jewish people have to follow the command of Moshe Rabbeinu, from the command given to Moshe Rabbeinu by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to take the Karban Pesach. That's the prerequisite for getting out of Egypt. That's the prerequisite for all these events happening. What is the significance of that? So it could just be practical. In order for the Jewish homes to be passed over, they need to do what they've been told to do. They need to designate that their home is Jewish. They need to demarcate with the blood and show this is a Jewish home. God passed over our homes. But I think if we think about it a little bit more deeply, the structure indicates that the actual following of these laws of Pesach, doing the Mishchu K'chu, was not just a way for Bnei Yisrael to distinguish themselves from the Egyptians, but it was also a spiritual prerequisite for the Jews to be redeemed. And this, of course, is the view of the Mechilta that Rashi cites in source number 11. V'haya lachem l'mishmeres. Remember, this is something particular to Pesach Mitzrayim. This is not a command for all time. This is not Pesach Doros, this is Pesach Mitzrayim. You have to take it 4 days beforehand and keep it in your house. Zeh lashon bikur shetam bikur mimum arba'im yom kodem shchita. Bikur dal yamim applies to other korbanos. But the fact that it has to be in your possession and designated 4 days before is unique to Pesach. Umipnei ma hiktim lekichaso lishchitaso arba'a yamim mashalot ziva came bePesach doros. Why was this necessary? So we're familiar with this answer. Why did they have to do this? Hayar Masya ben Cheresh Omer, Harei Omer Vavor Alayach Varech Vinei Yitech Eis Dodim, Higia Shvush Nishbati L'Avram She'aga Elas Banav, V'lo Hayu B'yadam Mitzvos Li'isasik Bahem Kadei She'igeil. The Jewish people were completely bereft of mitzvos. Now, it's a little bit more of a positive spin in Rashi. Rashi makes it sound like they just didn't have any mitzvos to do. In the Navi Yechezkel and other midrashim, it's harsher. It's not just that the Jewish people didn't have mitzvos, it's that they were totally involved in Avodah Zarah. It's not just that they were bereft, they weren't commanded yet mitzvos, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave the mitzvos to be commanded. It's that they weren't deserving of being free. They were completely naked of mitzvos. Shenamar va'at erom ve'eryeh. V'nasan lahem shtei mitzvos, dam pesach v'dam mila, shemolubosu alayla, shene'amar misbosesach v'damayach v'shnei damim, v'omer v'chule, gamis v'dam brischa shalachti asirayach miborim mayim bo. L'fisha yeshetufim b'avodazara, amar lahem mishchu k'chulachem, mishchu yideicha me'avodazara, u'k'chulachem tzon shal mitzvah. So what seems to emerge from this mechilta and from the Navi Yechezkel, which it's working off of, is that the act of designating the Egyptian deity, the set, 4 days before its actual slaughter, alerted the Mitzrim to their intentions. And that act itself transformed the Jewish people from a group of idol-worshipping slaves without any merits into a nation worthy of entering this relationship with Kadosh Baruch Hu as an Am Segula. So in this light, the significance of Karban Pesach, and especially Pesach Mitzrayim, lies not so much in what Hashem did for the Jewish people in passing over the Jewish homes, but it recalls and represents the initiative, or the initiative is not the right word, it recalls and represents the sense of faith, the expression of faith and emunah in the Mesiris Nefesh that Bnei Yisrael did in affirming that they believed in HaKadosh Baruch Hu and that they weren't worried what the Egyptians would do to them. And by identifying with HaKadosh Baruch Hu and with the collective national destiny, they were now entitled to be the beneficiaries of the Hashgacha Pratis of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So Pesach Mitzrayim, think about it, they're not yet out. They're not yet free. So the primary focus of Pesach Mitzrayim can't be, it's illogical to say that it's Hodah, and it's remembering what HaKadosh Baruch Hu did for us. Yes, it's a bit of I would say that the time continuum in Yahadus is not so ein muktam u'mu'uchar when it comes to religious experiences. But if you think about it, the first Pesach was a Seder that was done with the faith that they were going to be freed. Even so, we can't say that the experience of the first Seder of Pesach Mitzrayim was primarily about what HaKadosh Baruch Hu did for us. It hadn't yet happened. It was really primarily an expression of what we were willing to do, what the sacrifice that we took. It was a way of saying, we believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we want to be worthy of whatever it is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to do for us. So Pesach Mitzrayim is not merely an expression of thanks and remembering what HaKadosh Baruch Hu did for us. It's a declaration of our loyalty to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and a demonstration of our willingness to observe His commandments. So that's why the Psukim make it, once Bnei Yisrael do the Karban Pesach, that then kicks in, and this reciprocal relationship, the covenant, the bris between Bnei Yisrael and Jewish people is forged that night through the offering of Karban Pesach, the Karban LaHashem. We now know why. Why is this Karban a testimony itself to God? Because that's the whole purpose of the Karban. It's the quintessential Karban LaHashem because it's a way of saying, we believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. All the other Karbanos have other ideas associated with them. Chatas, to get rid of an Aveira, Asham, Shlomim, Ola. They all have their separate ideas that go along with it. Karban Pesach is kol kulo laHashem. That's what it's all about. It's about expressing our faith in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And so if I have some lishma, my lishma is even a little bit off when it comes to Karban Pesach, that's it. It has to be the purest of intention. It has to be perfect. It's the Karban laHashem. So this theme of Mesiras Nefesh, declaring our absolute faith in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I think that's the backdrop to the whole story of Yitzias Mitzrayim, and it's partially what allows us to deserve Yitzias Mitzrayim, and I think that's why it precedes, the Karban Pesach precedes the actual celebration of what we call Pesach, and it integrates into the whole story in the Seder, the events of the Seder night. But on top of that, as we see, it can also serve somewhat independent purpose apart from the holiday of Chag HaMatzos. This is where Pesach Sheni comes in. Because even if you aren't experiencing Yetzias Mitzrayim or reliving the experience of Yetzias Mitzrayim, if you don't have the opportunity to offer this unique karban, this karban, which is the only karban which allows you to say, I declare my absolute faith in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that I'm willing to be moser nefesh for that faith and to observe his mitzvos, then you've really missed a unique opportunity. It's not just that you missed an opportunity to recall the Exodus. There are other times where we can recall Yetzias Mitzrayim. We do it every day. But what you've missed when you don't offer the Karban Pesach, what the Temeim realized, is that this chance to proclaim their allegiance to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and their faith in him was a once-a-year chance. And it wasn't fair. Lama Nigara. That was the motivation of those who said Lama Nigara. They wanted to be able to offer this particular karban, separate from Pesach. Why should it be that we can only offer it in the context of Karban Pesach, in the context of Yetzias Mitzrayim, in the context of Chametz? We want to offer a Karban Pesach and declare our faith in HaKadosh Baruch Hu aside from that. And that's really what the Torah demonstrates by holding off, by not giving this commandment right away. The Torah is showing you that this initiative, it's so closely connected with the whole idea of Pesach. The whole idea of Pesach is to demonstrate our faith in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the way B'nai Yisrael were able to cause this commandment to be revealed is by demonstrating that initiative. And I would say in a certain sense that Pesach Sheni is almost an enhanced form of Pesach Mitzrayim. Because Pesach Mitzrayim, the Jews need to be commanded. They don't have anything. They don't have the ability as slaves yet to demonstrate the initiative. So they're told to do it. It's still an amazing thing that they do it. It's still worthy of them being redeemed. But an even kind of enhanced form of that, a pristine form of that, is for them to actually take the initiative, for the Jewish people to say, we want to offer this karban. We're not even commanded. Before, we needed to be commanded to it. Now we want to do it. We want to offer this. And that's why they are given the schus of being the ones who, quote-unquote, caused the commandment to be given. So the Torah highlights this by holding off on the discussion of karban Pesach, Pesach Sheni, until now, and also highlights the motivation of those who asked to bring this karban by shifting from Pesach to Pesach LaHashem and Korban Hashem. This shift in terminology demonstrates the keen awareness. When they said Lama Nigara Levilti HaKrivas Korban Hashem Moado, they sensed that this Pesach was a singular sacrifice, a singular vehicle to express the theme of total dedication. So Pesach Sheni, to sum up, shares something in common with Pesach Rishon. It does, they both express this idea of absolute faith in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In fact, we don't necessarily focus on this at the Seder. Our Seder, the focus is on what HaKadosh Baruch Hu did for us. Anivelo Malach, Anivelo Saraf. But the Machzer Vitri, in his Perish LaHagadah, which you can find in the Haggadah Shlema, I think also in the Torah Chaim Haggadah, actually says that when we say Ba'avur Zeh Asa Hashem Li B'Tzeis Mitzrayim, we're supposed to say Ba'avur Zeh Mipnei Avoda Zu She'avadati B'Mitzrayim Nigalti. Even at the Seder, we're supposed to emphasize and highlight because of what we did to deserve this this redemption, that's why we're here today. So while I would say that that theme is somewhat de-emphasized at the Seder, when it comes to Pesach Sheni, like Pesach Mitzrayim, the focus is on the idea of what we did, the initiative of Klal Yisrael. And that's the explanation for the extraordinary circumstances, or the exceptional circumstances, surrounding the commandment of Pesach Sheni. The proactive affirmation of their faith in HaKadosh Baruch Hu is somewhat symbolized by the way the Torah reveals this. I want to come back to one or two other interesting points that relate to this idea. The Meshech Chachma has an unbelievable chiddush. Unbelievable chiddush that I think demonstrates the ability of Karban Pesach to transcend the events of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Rashi in source number 12, on the pasuk V'chi Yagur Yitzchak Ger V'asa Pesach LaHashem, cites a peculiar havamina that the Medrash Halacha has. Yachol Kol Nisgar Yaseh Pesach Miyad. I gotta finish up. Talmud Lomer V'hayok Ezrach Haaretz Ma Ezrach Barba Asar Af Ger Barba Asar. Rashi says you might have thought that every convert has to offer a Korban Pesach. No matter when they convert, they offer a Korban Pesach. Kamash Milan, Vayok Ezrach Haaretz, just like native-born Jews offer the Korban Pesach only on Arba Asar, so to a Ger. What's this Havamina? So it would seem that this Havamina is that the Korban Pesach takes on significance. It's a Korban of Gerus, in a certain sense. Anytime a person converts, they have to offer Korban Pesach. Like the Jews in Mitzrayim, the Korban Pesach was a way of converting themselves, transforming them into Am HaNifchar, into the nation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So in a certain sense, Korban Pesach is not just about Yetzias Mitzrayim, it's about a conversion process, transforming ourselves, declaring our faith in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But, the Medrash says, it's limited, Rashi, citing the Medrash, it's limited to the day. You can't bring Korban Pesach other than Yudala. So the Meshech Chachma takes this to its logical extreme. You can look at source number 3, I don't have time to read it inside. He says, normally a ger has to bring an olas ha'of. Part of the process, we don't have it today, part of the process when the Beis HaMikdash existed was three parts for a male, two parts for a female. Mila, Tvila, and Hartzaz Damin, bringing a carbon. So normally you bring an olas ha'of. Meshech Chachma says, if a convert converts around Pesach time, they can substitute for the Olas HaOf with a Korban Pesach. They don't have to bring the Olas HaOf. The Korban Pesach can be their Korban for Gerus. He says, V'im ki zechadash v'lo niskar klal. He's convinced that this is the case, and that he understood the Medrash to say, you just can't offer the Korban Pesach outside of Yudalit. But if you offer it on Yudalit as a Korban Gerus, it's fine. And again, I think the idea is clear. Pesach Sheni, the whole idea of Pesach Sheni and how it achieves some independence from Pesach Rishon is in a sense through this theme of Mesiros Nefesh, transformative power that Korban Pesach has, declaring our absolute faith in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And I think that's why, just to come back to our last question, why the Torah buries this narrative somewhat. Why did the Torah start Sefer Bamidbar with a discussion of Iyar and then withhold this until Parshas Balosta? So I think, though I haven't seen this anywhere, I think there's a particular problem in Gnus in not having offered Korban Pesach. Even if they didn't offer other Korbanos in the Midbar, even though they might have had, didn't have the ability to offer other Korbanos, there's a specific Gnus in not offering Korban Pesach. They should have tried to do whatever they could. I don't know if they couldn't do Mila, if it was dangerous. They could have said, they should have tried to say Lamani Gara. Or even if they couldn't have, it's really a gnus to not offer the Korban Pesach, to not be able to offer this Korban, which is unique, the Pesach LaHashem. That's something which is lignus on Shel Yisrael. During this period of Sfira, when we take the leaps of Chipazon that we underwent the night of Pesach, and we try to build ourselves up day by day, I think the fact that Pesach Sheni falls out during this time works out beautifully. And the idea of Pesach Sheni is that we should, even independent of Pesach, certainly it's part of what Pesach is about, try to take the initiative in our learning by coming to a Sunday morning learning program, by doing other things, to take a proactive stance as a way of demonstrating our faith and our Mesiras Nefesh and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And really, beyond skipping Tachnun and eating a piece of matzah, when you eat that piece of matzah, what Pesach Sheni is really about is about expressing our absolute faith in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is about expressing the sentiment, Lama Nigara Lidl Tia Krivas Karban Hashem B'moadah. Have a good day, everybody.